does feel like the weather's starting to turn and that we are entering fall, although it's anything but here, mild in the Pacific Northwest, and a record 80-degree days. We don't see this type of stuff, but that's another subject for another night. However, in other parts of the country, the weather is changing and the fall briskness is in the air. It's my favorite time of the year, as you know, to talk about things such as ghosts and hauntings. But tonight we're going to expand beyond that and talk about many mysterious events. In fact, maybe one of the most mysterious places on Earth, the Alaska Triangle. It could be up there with the Bermuda Triangle. Certainly there have been many people by the tens of thousands that have gone missing up in the Alaska Triangle, much like many have gone missing planes and ships and whatnot in the Bermuda Triangle. And to talk about this tonight, we have the author of Alaska's Mysterious Triangle, Mike Ricksecker. A researcher, he's a filmmaker, he's been featured on Travel Channel's The Alaska Triangle, Animal Planet's The Haunted, Bio Channel's My Ghost Story, and many, many other programs. He's also the director and the producer of the Shadow Dimension docuseries. Mike, welcome into the Paranormal. Good to have you here. My favorite time of the year, the month of October. How about you?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Jeremy. Yeah, I really love October. It's a great month, great time of year. The month kind of started with a little bit of that aftermath of the of the hurricane, but the whole last week out here in Cleveland, Ohio, has been pretty lovely.
It is definitely mild in many, many places of the country, but the change in the air is coming. What have you found up in the Alaska Triangle? And I guess before we get started, describe the area if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. The Alaska Triangle. I mean, we're talking, an area, like you were saying, much like the Bermuda Triangle, and we find these different types of areas all over the world. And with Alaska, it's a massive area. You know, people kind of don't realize how large Alaska is. It's 2.5 times the size of Texas. The Triangle area itself basically extends from Juneau in the south to Anchorage in the middle, then all the way up to Ukiavik at the top. So about 188,000 square miles. But, that's us as humans trying to, give some boundaries to this activity that actually extends well beyond the boundaries.
And these, I guess, would run the gamut. Reports of not only, as I said, ghosts and hauntings, but obviously UFOs and portals, even, as I said, missing people and planes and even shipwrecks and the kind, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You have all that kind of activity. Similar, again, to what you see in Bermuda or the Dragon Triangle out there by Japan. There's actually a Lake Michigan Triangle and several of these locations. But yeah, it's missing planes, missing people. When it comes to Alaska, the numbers are staggering. 16,000 people have gone missing since 1988. And you look at the population of this state, it's about the same population as the city of San Francisco. The percentages on that are really astounding for that many people to go missing. But you also have the paranormal activity. You have UFO sightings, you have the cryptids, a lot of different things going on up there.
Is there some explanation for what's at play there? Maybe it's a vortex or a portal of something of the kind.
Well, that's the idea. A portal would be something that would be a result of the vortex energy. But basically the idea, and the U.S. Department of the Interior did some electromagnetic surveys up there back in the 1960s, and they discovered what they described as negative magnetic anomalies up there. But the idea is basically that in these areas, you have that magnetic energy from the Earth's core, the vortex energy that is, welling up. And basically, as that magnetism permeates through the Earth's mantle and the crust, it's interacting with different metals and minerals and these sorts of things. And depending on what it runs into along the way, that's where it can create these different magnetic fields. Now, with Alaska, you have other factors at play as well. So not only do you have the Earth's magnetism, You have volcanic activity there that creates its own energy. You have seismic activity. The largest earthquake ever recorded in history in North America was right there in the Anchorage area in the 1960s. And then you have the the solar flares that bombard the area. The Earth's magnetic shield there is actually weaker. It's a little bit thinner there. And that's why we have the aurora borealis, is you have those protons and electrons coming from the solar flares that are bombarding that area. So you have this magnificent cocktail of different energies in that area that's spawning off all this strange activity.
Give us an idea of what else people have reported to have witnessed and gone through there in the Alaska Triangle.
I mean, there's a lot of strange activities, pick a category and there it is. We talk about,
pick a category. What about shadow beings? Because that really runs the gamut. These could be, human shaped shadow beings, but also, shadows in the form of animals, right?
When it comes to shadow beings, and I have a whole other entire book on that in and of itself, A Walk in the Shadows, A Complete Guide to Shadow People. But yeah, they can take the form of a lot of different things. They, it's not just a human figure, although that's, pretty much the most, commonly reported. So they could be human figures. They could be human figures wearing clothes. They could be very translucent. They could be what we call a mist or a wisp. But yes, they can also take the forms of animals as well. People report a large variety, whether it's dogs, cats, snakes, spiders. People see all kinds of things.
I guess anything from like black masses to mist to full body apparitions, even humanoid kinds of entities, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, when I was stationed up there in Alaska, I was in the Air Force. As a very young man, 92 to 95, stationed at Elmendorf Air Force Base. And I spent two of those 3 years in the basement of the Alaska Command Building, communications facility there. And in the back office area, we routinely saw shadows moving about back there. Between the cubicles, darting into a back corner. We even on occasion would see them in what we called the rack room, where it's, we had a lot of our different communications racks and routers and multiplexers and things like that. We would see them darting in there on occasion. And it's interesting because the rumor at the time that I was there, you had to be kind of hush-hush about it because you didn't want to find yourself down at mental health, which is where you would find yourself if you talked about that too vocally. But kind of the whispers amongst everybody was that the building had once been a hospital and where we were at was the morgue. But what's interesting about that is... when I did the research for the book, that's a story that I had for, 25 years. And so that's what I was going to write about. But then when it got to actually, doing the research on the building, I discovered, the building was being used for exactly what it was built for, which is command. It's always been a command center. So then I had to wonder and theorize, okay, then why were we seeing shadows down there in this communications center? So that's where we start getting into other ideas about perhaps interdimensional activity, perhaps time slips, that sort of activity, which, of course, the magnetism of the triangle could spawn off.
There's also been reports over time of these beings have very ominous-looking eyes, sometimes described as glowing eyes. Have you heard those reports as well?
They can. Not always. It depends on the shadow. There's a large variety of different types of shadow beings, but they can have the red eyes. I've heard reports of other colors, yellow, green, purple. And people try to attribute some sort of attribute to the specific color, but really it's just, these can have glowing eyes. The red-eyed shadow entities are generally considered a more nefarious type of shadow entity. And of course, people are very frightened of those sorts of things. And really I spent a lot of time as a paranormal investigator, and the most malevolent case that I was ever on actually dealt with a red-eyed shadow entity. So they can, it's around Halloween time. So you could say, they're pretty spooky.
One of the most common occurrences that we've heard, particularly with the Bermuda Triangle, and I'm guessing it's not any different with the Alaska Triangle, is that of missing airplanes. In fact, that may be a more common occurrence, or maybe not. I guess how many reports are there of planes going down, and do we know about missing crew and number of people and any wreckage that's been uncovered, that sort of thing?
Well, when you're talking about the Alaska Triangle, you know, the most famous cases from 1972, the Boggs baggage disappearance, those, House Majority Leader Hale Boggs and Alaska Congressman Nick Begich, along with a couple of others that, took off from Anchorage, headed toward Juneau and disappeared somewhere in the Portage Pass. Nothing has ever been found of that plane ever again. It was the largest search and rescue mission in U.S. history at that point in time. Thousands of people were deployed out to there. They implemented spy planes trying to find that plane. Nothing has ever been found even since then. No shred of wreckage or anything. It's like it completely disappeared. But, that's not the only case. Yeah, there are, dozens of reports of planes going missing throughout Alaska. Another one of the more famous ones would be 1950. It was a huge Douglas Skymaster plane taken off from Elmendorf Air Force Base, 44 personnel aboard, and flying. They basically crossed over from Alaska into Canada or somewhere around the snag area when all of a sudden all contact was lost. They never reported any distress or anything like that, just completely lost contact. And again, massive amount of personnel were deployed to try to find them. Nothing was ever found. But what's interesting about that one is just afterward, a couple of weeks later, there was a smaller plane that went down around that same area. They found that one immediately, still could not find the Douglas Skymaster. And on either side of the date that it went missing, you had UFO reports. So you have some speculation, one, did it somehow disappear through a portal or that sort of thing? Or two, was it possibly abducted by extraterrestrials? So, we don't know for sure, but there's definitely a lot of different theories.
Absolutely. We could talk at length about those. One of the other situations at play here is UFO sightings. Has there been a mass UFO sighting within the Alaska Triangle?
Well, Alaska seems to be one of the more active areas in the country for UFO sightings. Now, it's kind of an ideal location if you were to be an extraterrestrial from whether it's another planet or another dimension or wherever you're coming from, because Alaska is so remote. It's so sparsely populated. You have a lot of areas that have not yet been explored. You have mountain ranges that there's not even a road going up there, or if you have a submergible vessel, you have 3 million lakes up there in Alaska and a coastline that's larger than the rest of the United States coastline combined. So plenty of places to hide. But you have a lot of reported sightings as well. The most famous would be the 1986 Japanese Airlines sighting, in which this actually got the FAA involved, the CIA, the FBI. Reagan's administration had a science team involved in it. And basically, the CIA shut it down. But in this particular sighting, it was a Japanese airline. It was a cargo plane. And the captain and the crew had seen this vessel, what we would call a UFO, basically shadowing the plane. And they, they were on the horn to the Anchorage Air Traffic Control. A United Airlines flight got in touch with it or got involved with the situation. And so it was a very, very interesting incident until the thing actually finally took off. And the fact that the CIA put the kibosh on it, it was fascinating since you had Reagan's science team that wanted more information. And the CIA said, no, we're done here.
Any reports of UFOs and planes crossing paths, like any near collisions? Because if there is some sort of magnetic field or some sort of vortex in this area, that could cause seemingly craft of both kinds, those piloted by humans and or by extraterrestrials, to seemingly be put on a collision course.
Yeah, well, you had that with the Japanese Airlines flight there. Back in the back in the 40s, you had some U.S. Navy airplanes, some scout planes that had gotten involved with some UFOs around the Kodiak area. So you definitely see that from time to time.
Interesting. As far as other strange activity up there, when people are reporting that they are seeing ghosts, do they see other paranormal phenomena associated with those sightings?
Well, you know, there are some interesting tales from up there when it comes to ghosts, whether it's just a straight up, you know, ghost story, lady in white sort of sighting. You have reports in an old mining camp of headstones that seemingly disappear. You also have the reports of, you know, various shadows and things like that, phantom screams. You know, one thing that I found interesting in researching the paranormal activity in the area is it's a lot of, you know, old hotels and or old bordellos. You know, people don't really think of Alaska in these terms, but in the late 1800s, early 1900s, there was a gold rush in the Klondike area, and people would travel through Alaska to access that area, even though it was in Canada. The ports of call were actually in Alaska, and so that sprouted a number of these different hotels and bordellos. And you would have a couple that, whether they're married or they're engaged or what have you, that would make that trip up there to strike their fortune. The male significant other, whether it was a fiance or a husband, would go off to basically mine the gold. The wife was left behind at the hotel. And then when he didn't come back, suddenly, she would, take up as a prostitute there. And then, of course, the significant other would come back and then murder the wife or the girlfriend or whoever it was. That you find that story in so many of these different old hotels and bordellos and inns throughout the Alaska area. So it makes you wonder how many of them are actually true, but people attest to the hauntings there of these people that, have seemingly lost their lives there.
What about lost civilizations? Any evidence of that? And then I guess if there is, do we have any indication or any theory whether those were made by humans or not?
It's interesting there because you have the stories of the Black Pyramid that may be hiding and buried underneath Mount Denali up there, which really all we have to go on are some anecdotal stories from, people who have somehow been involved with operations that may be going on there, and a report of a seismic test that was done in the early 1990s that was only ever witnessed on one news report that aired in Anchorage at that time and has seemingly been covered up since then. So it's hard to really pinpoint it. But within that area where it's supposed to be are some remains of some sort of human activity from long ago, but hard again to substantiate it, whether that's part of the Black Pyramid or something else going on. But you do find evidence of giant bones in the area. There have been cemeteries uncovered with either giant bones or giant skulls and these sorts of things. And when you look back into the old Inuit legends and lore, they talk about these giants coming over from Siberia across the old land bridge that had once been there, and basically they would interbreed with the with the natives there. Some of them predated the natives there, and when you look at the details of the story, what's uncanny about it is they really have a lot of parallels to the old Nephilim stories from we're talking like old biblical type stories of the Nephilim and the giants. And you're basically finding that same story in Alaska, which is really fascinating. How did that story get up there within the native Alaskan culture? But you do find those stories there.
Were there reports of civilizations prior to humans generally, in the Alaska area, I guess, whether underwater or not?
Well, it's possible. You know, we don't know for sure because so much is either, you know, buried under the ground or buried under ice. And we just haven't really had that kind of exploration up there. But you know, you do have basically the stories of these possibilities of things that were there. There's even a possible Sphinx that is in the area. And now, you know, some of the mainstream scientists will say, well, no, that's a natural rock feature. But then you have others, some of the natives or some alternative researchers that are saying, no, that's actually a carving, an ancient carving. Who knows what civilization it may have been that would have carved it. But, you know, they're saying you know, tens of thousand years old. So we don't know because you can't, you know, carbon date rock.
Precisely. So what are your thoughts on some of these beings, the possibility of them being interdimensional?
Well, I think a lot of what we're dealing with, we're talking something like, you know, paranormal activity or shadow entities or something like that, or even some of these missing airplanes. You know, we may be talking about some sort of interdimensional activity, some something coming from some other plane of existence, you know, whether from another planet out in the cosmos somewhere, if there's a civilization out there that knows how to be able to travel interdimensionally, or something that's here on our planet, something that would be an ultra terrestrial, something that's living and coexisting with us, but on another plane of existence within another dimension and knows how to cross that plane. And so I think that's what's happening here in a lot of cases. You know, it could even be, you know, some sort of, you know, time travel incident. You know, if you think about some of these planes that go missing, you know, like the Douglas Skymaster, some people speculate that, you know, it may have, you know, passed through some sort of portal, perhaps to another dimension, you know, or to another point in time. And if it's the latter where it traveled to some other point in time, well, let's throw a number out there. Let's say it went 500 years into the past. Well, if you know, who do you have up there 500 years ago? You would have the native Inuit. And if they saw something like that suddenly morph into the air, it would have no context to know what an airplane is. They would relate it to what they know, which would be birds. You know, here's this giant, loud, thunderous bird in the air. And that may be where we're getting some of our Thunderbird legends.
It very well possibly could be. What about some of the ghost stories that you've uncovered through some of the other projects that you have written about? Do you have some favorites? Because, you know, we're just a couple of weeks from Halloween, and I think now would be the time to maybe crack open that book and share one of these with the audience.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've had a lot of different experiences. Like I said, I spent a lot of time as a paranormal investigator, but, you know, one of my favorite it was at Mineral Springs Hotel in Alton, Illinois, some years back now. And we had been running an event, a paranormal convention there, and the investigation was part of it. And it was late at night. It was really just starting to wind down. There was a handful of us left, and we were in the upstairs abandoned part of the hotel doing some EVP work in the one corner room. And all of a sudden, we start hearing some noise from out in the hallway. So it's five of us go out there and we have a look and, you know, looking down the hallway and from at the end of the hall, at first we thought maybe there was a fire because there was this black smoke that was billowing up at the end of the hall and started coming closer and started doing something very unusual. It started creeping up the wall on the right-hand side of the hall and it would creep back down and creep back up. All the while it's coming closer and closer. And finally, one of those times that it creeped up the wall on the right-hand side, it morphed into the apparition of a little girl. And then, you know, we're starting to try to coax her closer and closer. And she stopped at this one particular doorway in that hallway where through that door into that room, you know, other people over the years had reported seeing a little girl in that room. And now it's like, here she was in the hallway right outside the doorway. We're finally seeing her. Now, what's interesting is, I told you there were five of us there. We all saw her a little bit differently. So like I saw her fully formed from her head down to about her knees, and then she dissipated away, where others had seen her fully formed at the feet, and then she started to dissipate away at the head. So to me, that kind of adheres to the idea and theory that, you know, we each, you know, well, the human body, you know, resonates within a certain frequency range, but everybody resonates a little bit differently. And you know, it's kind of the idea that because we each, you know, have our own energy resonate at a different frequency, that, you know, this being that's there in front of us, who also has their own energy and frequency in which it resonates, that that's why we're all seeing her a little bit differently, even those five of us that distinctly saw her.
Mike, are you going anywhere haunted or purportedly haunted for Halloween?
Well, that weekend for Halloween, I'm going to be at the Warren's Paracon. That's October 29th, Mohegan Sun in Connecticut. So we'll be there having a good time. I'll be speaking about shadow entities at that particular event. So that's Halloween weekend for me.
Absolutely. At Halloween following on a weeknight doesn't really work for the adults, but yet it's really much more of a thing for the kids. At least the trick or treating part is. Mike, thank you so much for coming on the program. Really enjoyed the stories here tonight. I hope we can talk again.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Again, Mike's website, MikeRucksecker.com, links to his social media up on the website as well. You see him on Travel Channel's The Alaska Triangle, Animal Planets, The Haunted, and Bio Channel's My Ghost Story. Among other places, he's also got his own YouTube channel and appears on some other shows as well. So make sure to check all that out. We will be taking this show on the road this Saturday night when we go to Oregon City for Nightmare on Main Street. That's kind of our Halloween show this year, and we'll have that for you at a special time of 6:30 Pacific, 9:30 Eastern. So for those who are used to tuning in on Saturday nights at 7 Pacific, 10 Eastern, just make sure that you show up early so you don't miss the first half hour of the program. We're going to be talking with paranormal investigators, some historians, some psychics, and who knows else who may stop by. We've got the details for those who want to join us on our website and on Facebook. RSVP there to the event page if you plan to join us in person. It's at 814 Main Street in Oregon City at 6:30 for those in Oregon or the Pacific Northwest. I would love to see you in the flesh. It has been a little while since we've gotten together, at least regularly. So I'd like to continue to get out and meet the audience. It's always wonderful to see you folks when you stop by and you say hello and you let me know you've been listening for however long and how you heard about the program and what you like and what you don't like and what you want more of. I really appreciate it. It keeps me going. And we'll be back next week, although it is a truncated schedule. Because of some things going on in my personal life that we have to just make some adjustments for. But those are all wonderful things. I've really been blessed personally and professionally. From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon in the remote Pacific Northwest, I am Jeremy Scott, somewhere between abnormal and paranormal. Until we talk to you next time, friends, good evening. And God bless.